Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the second beginning of Ambassador College at Big Sandy, Texas. Boy, it reminds me of starting in Pasadena in 1947. We had four students. We had a small assembly room, but the four students didn't fill it up. The room was not, hardly a 20th as big as this room. You know, this was just part like a big barn when we started. It was the original old tabernacle for the Feast of Tabernacles. Now, this is only a part of it. It was all one great big room. The dining hall, everything was all one big room. And the platform in the middle of everything was right back over in here, and it's so that you could see the other side. This was half of it down this way, and the other half went the other way. Well, I was just a while ago looking over the envoy of the 1964 year, the first year here. And my, what a change has taken place since then. Now, Ambassador College was founded back in 1947 in Pasadena. The campus in Brickett Wood was founded in 1960, and this one in 1964. That college we kept running for 14 years, and this one for 13, and now we're reopening here. We'll soon have 14 here, only we hope this will keep on going from that time on. Now this morning I want to tell you why Ambassador College was founded. It wasn't founded for the reason other colleges have been founded. It wasn't founded to be the same kind of college as any other college anywhere on earth. This college is altogether different, absolutely unique. The church was very small at the time. I was holding evangelistic campaigns out in different parts, in the Pacific Northwest. Nearly always there were converts as a result of each campaign. I would have a campaign lasting usually 6 weeks, 6 nights a week, Sunday through Friday. And then, of course, the church had its own services on the Sabbath. And always there would be a number of converts, and I would try to organize them into a small little group to hold church services, and somebody's home wouldn't be large enough for group for anything more than just somebody's home. But there was no minister. And pretty soon the church fell apart. I don't think any of them lasted over 6 or 8, 10 weeks, if they lasted that long. Where there is no shepherd, the sheep are soon scattered. And I began to realize that we needed help. We not only needed trained ministers. In the meantime, this work started with just my wife and myself. That's all. I had an old-style neophile, I forget the name of it even. It was an ancestor of the mimeograph. Hand cranked. My wife was the pressman, and I was the editor. I wrote things on a typewriter, cut them on a stencil, put it on there, and they ground them off. And we would carry the whole thing over to the post office. You know, if we try to carry upwards of 3 million copies of The Plain Truth to the post office today, well, it takes several truckloads to do it today. But everything started very, very small. But finally, I had come to the place where we had about 15 employees in the office. And I began to realize that we needed different kinds of employees. many more than just ministers. And the church was growing, and I knew it would continue to grow. And so God showed me that we had to have a college to start it. Now, at the same time I was broadcasting on radio, we lived in Eugene, Oregon. I had to go to Portland, Oregon every week, and it had come to the place I was on the air daily, and I had to go to Portland, stay there for half of the week. I would usually go up on the Sabbath, preach at Eugene in the morning in the Sabbath, preach it up near Albany, Oregon, in a country church up that way, the Methodist Church, in the afternoon, and then go on to Portland and have a broadcast in the afternoon in Portland on Sunday. Well, finally, I had to spend half of every week in Portland and only half in Eugene. And we didn't have the facilities for recording the broadcasts. And at that time, we didn't have tape like we do today. At that time, they were on what we called electrical transcriptions, big 15-inch records, discs, like a record, only larger. And they could only be used, I suppose they could have been used two or three times, but they were not hard like records are. Would not last long. And we didn't have proper facilities up there. And I realized I needed to be in Hollywood to get the broadcast out. And beside that, we had finally gone on the air in Hollywood daily. And the work had been increasing and was becoming nationwide. So I realized I needed to be near Hollywood. I didn't want to live in Hollywood. I didn't want to live in Los Angeles because I regarded it as the home of all crackpots. I was quite impressed with Pasadena. And Pasadena was a very cultural, beautiful city at that time, a small city, just about 100,000. And so, finally, God opened the way. Quite a story. I had spent weeks and months even walking over the streets of Pasadena looking for a place for a college. So I can't go into that this morning. But anyway, finally, a place was miraculously opened up, or providentially, I probably should say, for the college. And I decided we needed a college. Now, we needed a college, not because we wanted to go into the college business, as I said just briefly yesterday afternoon, but to train people for a growing work for God. Now, it had to be a different kind of college than any other. Why did it need to be a liberal arts college? Why not just a Bible college to educate people for the ministry? We had to educate them for other things, but I wanted an educated ministry to be an educated ministry, not just Bible alone. I wanted them to have the things that were necessary for a well-educated person. I knew we were going to need women in the work for various things. So the college needed to be co-ed. There were other reasons why it should be a co-ed and why it needed to be a liberal arts college and not just a Bible school. But now I knew that education had become materialistic. I knew there was something very wrong about education. I had a talk with a man, I was just trying to think of his name this morning, and it escapes me now, I don't remember it. Of course, he was a doctor somebody with probably a couple of three PhDs after his name. But he was the head of all of the state university institutions in the state of Oregon. That is, he was over the University of Oregon, Oregon State University. It was OSC at that time, Oregon State College, Agricultural College at that time. It's now Oregon State University. And the State Teachers College. He was over all of the universities in Oregon. I had a talk with him. He said, Mr. Armstrong, I can't tell you how much I envy you your opportunity. He said, you were right. Education is all wrong. We're off on the wrong foot. It's absolutely materialistic. It is just simply fraught through with evil. And you have an opportunity, Mr. Armstrong, and I don't know of any other man that has such an opportunity, to start from scratch, to blaze a new trail, to recapture the true value. You know, I grabbed on that. That has become the slogan of Ambassador College, recapture the true values. People do not have a sense of values in the world anymore. They have a false sense of values. And I had a chance to start a college that would recapture the true values. Now, the values are a lot more than just materialistic. I didn't fully understand it at that time. I've continued to learn myself. I've been going to school all my life. Now, it may surprise some of you to know that I never went to a college or the university. I had taken a course when I was 18 years of age on a sort of a self-appraisal, a self-investigation, to analyze one's own self, aptitudes, talents, if any, abilities, and also lack of abilities, handicaps, faults, likes and dislikes. And then also an analysis of the various professions, the various occupations and kinds of jobs and things in life. I learned that most people in life are victims of circumstance. Most people, if you'd ask them, how did you come to be in the job you are, the profession, the business, the whatever you are, the occupation, well, they just, circumstances got them into it. They never thought, what am I going to do when they were 16, 18 years of age? They had never taken a course of self-analysis to decide where they belonged. They didn't realize that a lot of people are square pegs, according to the old proverb, fitting the square peg in the round hole. They're in a job where they don't belong. They're in the kind of an occupation or a job in which they don't have the proper talents or abilities, and where their faults are a big handicap. But that book opened my eyes. I happened to find it in a public library. I was quite ambitious by that time. I wanted to go places in the world. I had ambition. I had come to realize that ambition was a desire for accomplishment accompanied by a will and a willingness to pay the price, because it never comes easy. It was going to be hard. It was going to take work. It was going to take industry. It was going to take self-application and self-denial. And I was willing to pay that price, but I wanted to be a success. Now, I wasn't converted. I didn't know God at all. I knew about God. I didn't even know. I'd never been convinced or never had seen proof of whether there is a God. I just took it for granted there was a God. I'd been taught that there was and brought up in church ever since I was an infant, of course. And I just took those things for granted. Now, I came to analyze why most people know what they do. Why do people believe what they believe? You know, most people don't know why they believe the things they do. They never stop to inquire in retrospect how they came to believe the things that they believe. Everybody has his own ideas. He has strong convictions on a certain line. Other people disagree, and they have convictions just in the opposite direction. And you can get into a big quarrel on things like that. But most people don't know why they believe what they believe. But most people I have found believe whatever's been sucked or funneled into their minds by other people. What they've been taught from childhood, what they get from their peers, other kids the same age, they're growing up, somewhat of what they're taught by parents, mostly not. Mostly they believe what they get from other kids instead of what they get from their parents. And then what they're taught in school. And in school, they're taught to just accept whatever is taught. For example, I had a grandson coming along some years ago. I don't know what grade. It might have been fourth to sixth grade, somewhere like that. Anyway, he was a kid in school, and he was asked to recite in front of the class or to answer the question. The teacher said, Larry, testing what he knew and what he'd been taught and what he'd read in the book, you know, in the textbook, or what the teacher had taught, who discovered America? Well, promptly, he said, the Indians. So why, Larry? You know better than that. You know that Columbus discovered America. No, ma'am, he said, I don't. He said, weren't the Indians already here long before Greek Columbus when he finally arrived? The teacher flunked him. He was supposed to believe what the book said. Education in this world is a matter of, well, an edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica. They get out new editions every few years. And if they find anything is not going along with modern science and the doctrine and theory of evolution, they change it to conform to the ideas of people today. If it had truth and fact, but the modern idea is to get rid of it, they change the truth into a lie. But I happened to look into an edition here some years ago, and that particular edition defined education. I looked to the article on education. I wondered, what do they define as the definition of education in the Encyclopedia Britannica? I can't quote it word for word, but it was approximately this. Education is the organized system by which an adult generation inculcates into the minds of the oncoming growing up generation their own ideas and concepts and beliefs that they want to just simply funnel right into the minds of the oncoming youth. Now that's what education is. Very few people realize it. And a lot of the things that are taught in education are false as hell. Now I'm not using profanity, I mean that literally, because the idea most people have about hell is absolutely false. Well, I had an opportunity to build a college that would recapture the true values. I knew that things were wrong, and education had become materialistic. There's a lot more to it, and you're going to hear more of it tomorrow in the sermon, tomorrow afternoon. I want to leave a lot of that for tomorrow, but I want to cover the part of education today. Now, we had difficulty getting started at Pasadena. I had begun, the Plain Truth was having a good circulation by that time. It was nationwide by that time. We were already on radio daily. And we were on Mexican stations. We were on some other 50,000 watt stations in different parts of the United States. And we had 36 applications of students for enrollment. But the place that we had found for the college was a former millionaire mansion, and we had to turn it into a college of classrooms. And all of a sudden, the city inspectors came and said that for a public use like that, things had to be altered. We had to tear out all the walls. We had to put in new electric conduits, new plumbing pipes throughout. We had to almost completely recondition the whole building. It was a headache of many thousands of dollars, and I didn't have the money. I had to sweat it through and pray my way through, but God was with me, and God wanted that college started. And so, instead of starting in early September, in the very first of September, as I had planned to do, we did not get started until October 8th, because we had a big reconstruction job. But we made the grade. There were times when once or twice, like Elijah, I prayed that I could die through the night, that I would not even wake up alive in the morning. I just thought I couldn't go on any longer. The troubles were so heavy. Until you've gone through a trouble like that, you can't know what it is. But we got by. The college finally opened October the 8th with 4 students. All the other of those 36 students that had applied for enrollment, in the meantime, since we didn't open on time, they'd gone to some other college. And we only had 4 students, but I had a faculty of 8. Now, actually, I had to have a faculty that had been trained in the education of this world. I had, I think it was 4, it was 3 or 4 PhDs. I had another 3 or 4 with MAs, and there were only 2 that had bachelor's degrees, but they were working for higher degrees in summer and summer vacations and to some extent night courses. I had a faculty that had been inoculated with the doctrine of evolution. Now, evolution is the atheist's attempted explanation of the presence of a creation without the pre-existence of a designer and a creator to design, plan, and bring into being the whole creation. The creation just happened some way. There was no thought. There was no planning. There was no mind. It just happened. You know, it's like I have a wristwatch here, a very good wristwatch, keeps very good time. But if I tell you that no man thought out and planned this wristwatch, and no man thought it out and planned it and designed it and then made it according to his plan, then it just happened. Now there's some gold in it. But the gold just came out of the ground and refined itself and got all of the ores and other things out of it. And there's some glass and there's some other metals inside, cogs and wheels, and they just came out of the ground. They all refined themselves. They designed themselves. They put themselves together. Nobody did it. No mind thought it out. And now, they even thought out a way to keep it going without ever winding. Just the fact that I move my arm as I go around through the day, keep winding it. It's self-winding. And all of that just happened. There was no design, there was no plan, it just happened. Does that make sense to you? Well, that is the doctrine of evolution. And the most highly educated people are inoculated with it and believe it. And not only that, it is the basic concept, the basic premise on which they base all of their knowledge, the eyeglasses through which they see everything and try to analyze and understand everything according to their theory of evolution. This happened so many million years ago. Well, they threw millions of years here and there, you know, just as if it was nothing. Does it make sense? Someday you're going to realize how ignorant the most highly educated people in this world really are. Absolutely. Well, it's dumbfounding, the ignorance in this world. Well, anyway, we finally got Ambassador College started. Now, I had 8 professors that were inoculated with this world's materialism. And I wanted to teach students God's way. So you know what I had to do? I had to think a little bit. Because I was only a servant of God, and I was looking to Him, and He was guiding me, and so He put what I needed in my mind. So in addition to an assembly once a week, which most colleges and universities would have, and which our professors thought we should have, I introduced a weekly forum. Now, you're going to find we have a weekly forum here. And that started back in 1947, and I'll tell you why and how it started. Because the average college doesn't have it. I knew that these professors were going to try to inoculate those 4 students with the theory of evolution, and that everything would be based on it, and you would see everything through those eyeglasses, so to speak. So the forum was an opportunity for me to talk to the students, and the professors were required to attend. So in the forum, I had 8 professors and 4 students, or a total of 12. And I talked about education, and I said things that made sense, and the professors couldn't deny a thing I said, but it wasn't what they'd been taught in the colleges and universities. It wasn't what had been just sucked into their minds, funneled, channeled into their minds. And they wanted to still believe, even though it was false what they believed. They couldn't refute my statements. They couldn't answer the truth. It had them backed in a corner where they couldn't get out, but all they did was to sit there and squirm. Now, I did not go to college, but I did not evade education. Now, at this point, I want to tell you something else about education. Most people look at education as something you go to college, you pay your money, you buy, and you go out and take it with you. It's like going to the grocery store for a quart of milk. You go to the store, you want a quart of milk, so they get it out. It used to be 5 cents. I don't know if it's probably about $5 today. I don't know. I don't have to buy it. It's done for me today. Anyway, you go into the store for a loaf of bread, a quart of milk, whatever, they wrap it up. You give them the money, you take it, and you take it out. Now you've got your milk, you've got your bread. So you go to college, you enroll, you pay the tuition, they give you the education, you walk out with it. Now that is the concept of education. And education is a process by which teachers and others will inoculate into your minds a lot of theories, a lot of ideas, about 50% of which is false anyway and is not true. But you're expected to believe it, and you go out thinking you're educated. Now, education is having a lot of knowledge, much of which may be false. It doesn't mean that your knowledge is true. And today, they have false values and false purposes in life. Now, that has led to the place that in life today and in the world, we have a world of awesome progress. Awesome progress. And yet, we have a world today of absolutely frightening troubles. And evils and problems that are absolutely unsolvable by human beings. We live in a world today that is very highly educated. And in modern education, through science, through technology, and with the power of government, they have been able to send men to the moon and back, to invent the marvelous modern computer. And it is a marvelous mechanism. Able to send unmanned spacecraft to land on the surface of the planet Mars and send back automatically close-up photographs right on the surface of Mars so we know exactly what it looks like up there. Although that is so far away that it will take too long to send a man there, even at the flight of, I forget how many thousand miles a minute they go. Oh, we're living in a marvelous age. Awesome progress. And yet half of the world is ignorant, utterly ignorant. Can't read or write. Illiterate. Half of the world is living in abject poverty, filth and squalor, over in places in Asia and Africa and even in South America. Many are actually starving to death. Just starving to death. You do not have enough food to eat. That's the world you live in. You only see part of the world here. You only know what you see. I've been all over the world in all of its parts. I've seen these things. I know what they are. And I want to tell you it's a frightening world. It's a frightening world. Why do we have a world with all of these troubles, unsolvable problems, and yet such wonderful progress? What a paradox. Making great progress and yet going backward. That's the world you live in. Now let me tell you, education has everything to do with it. Because the world is what its leaders have made it. The leaders are what education made them. And education's made the leaders so they don't know how to solve problems. They know how to deal with things. They don't know how to deal with people. They don't know how to solve problems. And the world is full of trouble. Something is wrong with education. I didn't know altogether what was wrong with education when I started Ambassador College in 1947, or when Jesus Christ started it through me. But he's continued to teach me, and I've continued to be willing to learn. And I've learned things even in the last 6 months that I didn't know then. Some of the things I'm going to tell you tomorrow, and we'll speak up tomorrow afternoon in the church service, that have to do with education, that have to do with why you are here, and why this college is here. You need to know why you're here. Why did you come here? Why are you alive? Why are you on the earth? Most people don't care. Most people don't know. They don't know why they're here. They don't know what man is. They don't know why he is. They don't know why he has the kind of a world he does or how it's going. And it all has a lot to do with education. Now, you know, if we're in a world with such a paradox, where the troubles are as awesome as the accomplishments, there has to be a reason. Because for every effect, there is a cause. There has to be a cause that produced every effect. That's axiomatic. Now, it all started 6,000 years ago. People don't know where it started. I want to tell you, back in about 15 years ago, in the decade of the 60s, one of the great educators of the world, Dr. Clark Kerr, of the university, the president of the University of California at Berkeley, he said the modern university is a factory. You know, that was new. People never heard of a factory. What are we manufacturing? We thought you manufacture automobiles, you manufacture gadgets, and things made out of steel or iron or metals in a factory. What is the university manufacturing? Well, he said the university is manufacturing knowledge and disseminating that knowledge. That is the business of the university. Now, modern science came along, and as a result, evolution came along about the same time the two got married. It was a kind of a fateful marriage, by the way. And so science has said, we no longer need the crutch of religious superstition, because all religion is superstition. There isn't any God, and all religion is simply superstition. We can throw that away now, and science brings us knowledge. And science is the modern Messiah that will solve all of our troubles and will rid us, cure, eliminate, all, eradicate all of our evils. But you know, science has not done that. Now, educators have said, given sufficient knowledge, we'll solve all of our problems. We will eradicate all of our evils. So, in the decade of the 1960s, the institutions of learning doubled the world's fund of knowledge. They produced more knowledge. So, by 1970, they knew about twice as much as they did in 1960. Now, the average person didn't know any more. I'll come to that. But in the meantime, let me tell you this. In that same decade of 10 years, the world's troubles doubled also. The knowledge didn't solve the troubles. It didn't cause them either, but it didn't solve them. Now, most of that knowledge, you say, well, I didn't know there was so much knowledge produced in 1960. You probably didn't. Because most of that fund of knowledge was in the areas of medicine and technology. And the average person never heard any of it. But it didn't solve our problems. It didn't cure our troubles. It didn't eliminate human suffering. It didn't make people happy. It didn't bring us world peace. And here's a world fighting. In the family, husband and wife can't get along together, and so every second marriage ends in divorce today. You young people starting college here, you think maybe you, here's boy and here's girl. Boy meets girl. And they begin to think of marriage. Isn't that wonderful? Oh, it's a wonderful thing. You're up in a high heaven for a while. So you get married. The chances are 50-50. It's going to bust up in a clash and a divorce today. Now, 20 years ago, about 1 out of 3 would end in divorce. 50 years ago, maybe 1 out of 4. 3 out of 4 would still stick. Today, families are breaking down all around. And the family structure is the foundation of any solid and substantial and enduring civilization. And this civilization is falling apart. You live in a world that's falling apart. It isn't going to exist much longer unless God Almighty intervenes. They say there is no God. Unless there's a God, there won't be any humanity left. I'll tell you why. The crowning achievement of science, instead of bringing us peace, instead of bringing humanity happiness, and the abundant, rewarding life, has been to bring us more troubles, more worries, more frustrations. And to bring us the weapons of mass destruction that can erase all human life, just blast all human life out of existence and off the face of this earth until there won't be a one of us living. And I tell you, unless God Almighty exists, another 25 or 30 years from now, and it's been longer than that since Ambassador College started, there won't be a man, woman, or child alive on this earth unless there is a God who comes down and takes over and takes charge and changes things. Man's education and the things that man is doing are leading to self-annihilation. Unless this college is different, you're wasting your time in coming here. And let me tell you one reason that actuated me and that why Christ caused me to open this campus once again is that I was informed that hundreds of students who qualified to enter Ambassador College, but there wasn't room and we couldn't take them at Pasadena, were going to go to some other university where they would be inoculated with that false education. I thought I owed something. And let me tell you, if Christ is in me, Christ in me knew that we owed something to those students. If we possibly could start them on the right track and give them the right kind of education that would lead to eternal life and eternal happiness and joy, abundance, a really rewarding life that gives you peace of mind and that is just absolutely thrilling. And joy is happiness brimful and running over. And that's what we ought to have. I couldn't stand the idea of so many young people going back into the colleges of this world. I said, we'll open up Big Sandy. Here are these wonderful facilities here, and we're going to give as many as we can take a chance. If we take too many, we wouldn't have this kind of college. We cannot do it. We tried it. We let Ambassador College get bigger with more students in Pasadena. Pretty soon it was another college of this world, ruining the minds of students. I had to start it all over about 3 or 4 years ago with a freshman class and just a few who qualified, who were sophomores and juniors, to continue on. But primarily it was a freshman class only. I had to start it all over as God's college, different from the colleges of this world, which are Satan's colleges. Pardon the expression, but it's true. It's absolutely true. Now, why this false education? There's a cause for every effect. And if you want to look to the effect, modern science has not proved a Messiah that would deliver us, but rather the Frankenstein that's going to destroy us. The doctrine of evolution has not brought any peace or any happiness into this world whatsoever. I say the world is what its leaders made it, and the leaders are what education made them, and it goes back to education. But you have to go clear back 6,000 years to the beginning. Someone says, now there goes Armstrong again, back there to Genesis 1, 2, and 3. You bet your life. There's a cause for every effect, and I've got to go to the cause, or you can't cure the effect. And I'm interested in the effect for today and tomorrow. I'm not going back 6,000 years. That's not the idea. That's where it all started. And you've got to understand it if we're going to change it today and change the future. And that's what I'm interested in. It all started with the creation of the first man. 6,000 years ago, God created all of the land animals. The day before, he had created the fowls of the air and so on. And before that, the fishes and water animals. Now he created animals, land animals, and man. But he created man after his own kind and his own image. Now he created cattle after the cattle kind. You'll read in Genesis 1 and verse 25. Verses 24 and 25, you read, the other animals were each after its own kind. Cattle after the cattle kind, of course, dogs after the dog kind, cats after the cat kind, elephants after the elephant kind. Then God said, let us. But you see, God was more than one person. God is defined in John 1, verses 1 to 5 in the New Testament as a God and also another personage called the Word. And the Word was with God. Now you've got two persons. But it says also the Word was God. and so is God God, and that there are two persons. How is that possible? Well, here is a man.